to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool Radio Program, our award-winning show that is broadcast here on the Liberty News Radio Network each and every Saturday evening from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time. And we're going out over our flagship tonight, 1380 in Memphis, as I mentioned, and of course the AM and FM affiliates of the Liberty News Radio Network, as well as our internet and satellite audiences. You can get us with the podcast now, and a lot of people were clamoring for that for a long, long time. We finally got that worked out, and the Liberty News Wire. You can even tune in over the phone. So many methods of delivery, so many ways to listen to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. And if you ever miss us live, don't forget you can catch us in the broadcast archives at thepoliticalcesspool.org. We had a great opening hour tonight with Keith Alexander. He has moved on. Coming up in just a little bit, joining me on the air will be Reverend Ted Pike, the executive director of the National Prayer Network, and he's going to be on with the latest update on the progress that is being made to shackle Americans' freedom of speech with the notorious hate crimes bill. And we're going to get all of the information about that coming up in just a little bit. Of course, I was out last week. We were celebrating kicking off the festivities surrounding this month, which on October 26th, we will celebrate our fifth year on the air, our five-year anniversary, turning 5 years old. It's our birthday in the Political Cesspool on October 26th. We are going to culminate this month's festivities with a birthday bash on October 24th, and then we'll have a fun Halloween show following that. So just a lot of stuff to look forward to this month in the Political Cesspool, and we hope that you'll join us each and every broadcast, not just in October, but always as we continue on providing you with the unique voice that no other radio program is delivering. And I found a story out of Ohio that really caught my attention. We posted a pretty extensive blog entry about it at our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. That's our internet headquarters. The politically correct purge continues seemingly unabated if you trust the national media to give you your daily bread, or should I say the so-called establishment media. But, of course, we are just as legitimate and a lot more honest than they are, which is why this show has experienced a tremendous growth. But here's the story. I don't know if you knew this or not, because I didn't until then. I'm a pretty smart guy. I know a lot of things, but I didn't know this. You can't know everything. But every state has two statues in the Statuary Hall of the Capitol Building in Washington, D.C. There is a federal law that created the National Statuary Hall, which was passed in 1864, and it allows each state to provide, quote, statues in marble or bronze, not exceeding two in number, for each state of deceased persons who have been citizens thereof, and illustrations of their historic renown or distinguished civic or military service as each state may deem worthy of this national commemoration. So basically what that said in legal speak is states can pretty much nominate two iconic figures to represent them in the National Statuary Hall. Now, in Ohio, their two statues that represent the proud history of the state of Ohio are of President James A. Garfield and former Governor William Allen. But not for long. William Allen supposedly supported slavery, so he's got to be thrown down the memory hole. State legislatures are currently searching for a replacement who, quote, better represents the values and heritage of the state of Ohio, end quote. They were in Cincinnati recently to tour the Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame because one of the people on the short list to replace Governor Allen is William Ellsworth Hoy, who played for the Reds back between 1894 and 1902. Now, William Hoy isn't exactly a household name, even among diehard baseball fans, so why is he on the list? Well, because he was the first deaf-mute to play professional baseball. Others on the list are more recognizable names, more appropriate names perhaps, such as the Wright brothers, Thomas Edison, and Tecumseh? That's right, an Indian chief who made war on Americans is thought to be a better representative of the values and heritage of Ohio than a former governor of the state. Of course, it goes without saying that the proud Confederate heroes are still the scum of the earth for defending the South against invasion, but that's different because they were white. Tecumseh can do it with immunity because he tried to kill the American settlers. But, you know, I tell you, if I'm a betting man, I'm going to bet on the Indian. My money's on the Indian. Maybe the deaf mute as a runner-up with the Indian winning in the end. The Wright brothers and Edison are probably just there to make it look like it isn't really just an excuse and an exercise in political correctness. The Wright brothers and Edison were obviously white men with real accomplishments, so they don't deserve any respect, but rather hatred. But, you know, there's still a couple of problems with the deaf guy, if you followed the story with me. He may have been physically handicapped, but he was still an evil white man, for one thing. For another, guess how he's listed in the history books on the plaque at the Reds Hall of Fame? He's listed as William Ellsworth Dummy Hoy. That's right. The first deaf mute in Major League Baseball was nicknamed Dummy, and he's still referred to that in official Major League Baseball displays. So, would selecting a deaf mute known as Dummy really be the best way to show how enlightened the Ohioans are? I don't think so, which, again, is why I'm betting on the Indian. After all, not only was Tecumseh not white, he killed a bunch of white people, which means he's the perfect choice for Ohioans to demonstrate their hatred and contempt for their own people, which is what political correctness is really all about. And it goes back to what we were saying in the first hour. People who work to destroy Western civilization are evil people. Can you imagine? Just step back. I know I went into a pretty elaborate commentary of that story, and I think it deserved it because it just really accentuates once again the extent that we've been placated here. I mean, why are we not? Why are conservative Ohioans not raising Cain about this? I mean, this was a guy, Tecumseh, murdered Americans by the scores. And that's one of only two people that the state of Ohio wants to immortalize in the National Statuary Hall? Am I missing something here? You know, that he, Tecumseh perhaps, beats out Thomas Edison and the Wright brothers. We'll keep you posted. It's not a given that Tecumseh is going to be selected. But I know cultural Marxism, and I know cultural Marxists. And I'm telling you, they're salivating to get this guy in there to prove how enlightened and progressive they are. I'll keep you posted. You can trust the political cesspool to let you know how it all shakes out. But I tell you, this is just yet another grotesque display of political correctness that, unfortunately, is not meeting any resistance from the founding stock of this country in a major way, except for, I guess, here on this show. We got to do something about that, ladies and gentlemen. We got to come together as an ethno-political movement or a force, if you will, and begin speaking out for our interests and on behalf of our unique cultural heritage as European Americans. And there's nothing wrong with that. Everybody else is able to do it and encouraged to do it, so should we be able to as well. And we must disregard these childish attacks that come from race-conscious European Americans. You know, they'll call us all sorts of names that they never would try to saddle the head of the NAACP or the president of Black Entertainment Television. You know, they'll call you all sorts of names, but you just got to thank them for that. What, you got to call me a name? Well, what's another one? You got another one for me? Oh, well, thank you. Bless you. It's just a name, folks, and it's coming from people who hate you to begin with. Don't be discouraged. Don't let the fact that your enemies might call you a name deter you from doing your duty as an American and as a conservative and standing up for your family, your ancestors, and the issues that animate us to take action, the issues that we all believe in, lower taxes, you know, right to life, just all of the conservative issues, Second Amendment, freedom of speech, freedom of association, tight immigration controls. I mean, all of the things that are just the basic conservative principles, we have got to be emboldened to do more than what we've done in the past several decades. I know that because we don't have true leadership, and the Republican Party certainly isn't any sort of leadership for our people, that we've become used to defeat, and perhaps we are so used to defeat that we don't even trot out to the battlefield anymore. But we've got to get over that. And this show can lead the way. We'll be back with more right after this.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages. Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
I want to give a quick plug to an author that I recently met from the United Kingdom. His name is Alex Krategic. And he wrote a pretty epic novel. It's a fictional work, but it's something that I think all of our people should read. The name of the book is simply Mister, and it's spelled out M-I-S-T-E-R. And it's a good book for many reasons, not the least of which being that it's a very intellectual read. It's got a very nice glossy cover. It's hard to cover. I mean, it's a very professionally produced book. But in this book, yours truly is the, you would obviously know this is a work of fiction when I tell you what I'm about to tell you, but I am the governor of Tennessee in this book. I've been written into the book, and it's a legitimate, great book. And I'm the governor of Tennessee in it. So check it out online. I actually just saw, I was sent some time ago the manuscript before it went to print and was obviously binded, and it came out as the finished product. But I saw the finished copy of the book just here recently. And so check it out. Go to Amazon, go to Google, Mister, M-I-S-T-E-R by Alex Krategic. And there's a lot of other twists and turns and surprises. And since it's a work of fiction, we might actually win in it. So go get that and excite yourself with the possibility of great strides being made on our people. That's just one of the things. I mean, being written into a book like that, that's just one of the experiences we've shared in the last several years of doing this program, and everything that we've done has been well documented. I don't think it's anything that will come as a shock to you. It's just, you know, every now and then, it's just particularly here during this month of our anniversary, and I know we talk a lot about the fact that we've been able to do this and we've been able to do that, defying the odds, despite near constant attack from the lavishly funded left. It's not just that we've been able to survive, but we've experienced tremendous growth. But that's not even what I wanted to tell you. What I wanted to tell you, and this comes directly from the heart, ladies and gentlemen, this is just me being as open and as honest and as real as I can be. As you know, we don't play characters on this program. The demeanor and the different personalities of the members of the hosting staff, myself and Keith and Bill Rowland, Winston Smith and Eddie Miller, that's who we are in real life. And one thing that we are, above all other things, are grateful. Grateful to you, our family of listeners, for making this dream that we have a reality. The reason we've been able to stay on the air for these 5 years is because, yes, we have this message of love for our people, a message of truth and courage that doesn't bow at the altar of political correctness. And I think to the extent that we're able to, we provide leadership. But you, ladies and gentlemen in the listening audience, you've rewarded us with your trust and support, and I want you to know that we all feel this way. Everything that we are and everything that we've accomplished is based upon the strength that we draw from you, and we can't thank you enough for that, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart. We love you very much, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for standing with us, and thank you for being with us, and we're going to fight hard over the course of the next 5 years to accomplish even more for our people. And one thing that you can take with you wherever you go is the fact that we will never betray you, We'll never embarrass you. You can count on us. We're here for you, and we appreciate you. That being said, a lot of other things to talk about today. Of course, Reverend Ted Pike, we've still got an hour and a half left in the show. Reverend Ted Pike will be my guest here in just a couple of minutes. He's going to be on to talk about the latest happenings pertaining to the hate crimes legislation that's making some pretty big strides, but Ted thinks we might have an opportunity to beat it. And when you're beating it, you're beating back people like Representative Alan Grayson. Did you hear what he did? And this is what we've got to put up with. This is what we've got to put up with all the time. Could you imagine if someone like myself had said something along the lines of what this man said, or even a limp-wristed Republican, for that matter? A Democrat, Representative Alan Grayson, apologized to the ADL. He apologized to the ADL for saying that the Republican Party wants old people to die quickly. You can remember this from a few days ago during one of the ta-ta-tas pertaining to Obama's push for government-funded socialized health care, which would bankrupt already bankrupt nation into oblivion. But anyway, that's right. A Jewish congressman attacks Republicans and conservatives, a.k.a. white people, and then apologizes, but only to his fellow Jews. Representative Alan Grayson sent a letter of apology to the Anti-Defamation League after describing the health care situation as a, quote, holocaust in America, end quote, on the House floor. Grayson, who is Jewish, first called Thursday to apologize to the ADL. He followed it up with a written letter which commemorates the beginning of a Jewish festival, Sukkot, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. A spokesman for Representative Grayson confirmed the contents of the letter, which were first reported by Fox News. What he said was, quote, "In no way did I mean to minimize the Holocaust. I regret the choice of words, and I will not repeat it." That's what Grayson said. But Grayson is making no apology, this is what I noticed, to Republicans who said they were offended when he said on the House floor Tuesday that the GOP's health care plan amounts to them wanting old people to die quickly. It was during a mocking apology to Republicans for that remark when he used the term Holocaust that Grayson raised the ire of some of his fellow Jewish folks. So, I mean, this is, again, why not apologize to the people he offended? How did he offend? You know, it's just double standards, hypocrisy, and no accountability, because we're the only ones, unfortunately, that have some sort of an organization or a media forum to call these people out. I mean, our folks, we're too complacent. We're too complacent. You know, people can insult us. They can falsely characterize that which we're advocating, and they can malign us, they can defame us, they can do basically whatever they want. And as long as they're doing it to only European Americans, there's going to be no repercussions whatsoever. And once again, that is because, recurring theme of the night, we don't have a lot of organization. We're 70% of the population of this country. We don't have one organization, other than, you know, perhaps the Council of Conservative Citizens, obviously, which is doing a good job, and European Americans United, a couple of others out there. But you know, just we're woefully unorganized. And the reason that is we're so enamored in the culture of bread and circus. Of course, we have to work for a living, unlike our enemies. It takes a lot of work and a lot of hours to tend to our family and support the welfare state in our spare time. But still, we've got to honor, you know, particularly, I'm speaking to my fellow Southerners here, honor the sacrifices of Lee and Forrest and Davis and the other great heroes of our people by giving, you know, 1% of that which they devoted to our cause. And for people outside of the South, you can just pick your hero. I mean, there are so many great heroes of our people throughout Europe and historical antiquity. Obviously, the great German a reformer, Martin Luther, and it's just so endless. I mean, to even begin to go through a laundry list, you would do a disservice, because there are literally hundreds that we can choose to emulate and follow their example. I mean, people like Baby Crockett. What happened to the people that used to produce men like that? I mean, where are we? I mean, surely those fires, those embers must be still smoldering somewhere within our soul. Let's stoke those embers and rise up and fight again and fight back, and let's take back our country. We're going to take a break. We'll be back right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool Guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
Big girls don't cry. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the program. It is Saturday evening, October 10th, and our featured guest for tonight's broadcast is our very good friend, the very venerable Reverend Ted Pike, the Executive Director of the National Prayer Network. You can learn more about Ted's work from his incredibly informative website, truthtellers.org. And, of course, anytime we have Ted Pike on, odds are we're going to be talking about hate crimes legislation and the latest development on that front. And that being said, Ted, I don't want to waste too much time with your introduction because you have some very, very important information tonight, my friend. Thank you for coming back on the show and sharing it with us.
Well, thanks for having me on, James. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you clear, my friend.
Okay. Yes, just as a little background, I think most of our listeners are aware that the federal hate crimes bill was passed by the House and Senate this spring, and the Senate attached the hate bill to the National Defense Authorization Bill as a rider. Now, America has a golden opportunity to destroy the federal hate crimes bill just this week, which, of course, is attached to the big federal spending bill. And the reason is that all spring long, Obama has been warning Congress that if it adds to the defense spending bill $100 billion extra pork for F-35 warplane engines, he will veto the defense bill. And, of course, that means the hate bill will also be vetoed and become history in this Congress. And just this last week, Congress is doing exactly what Obama told them not to do. They are attaching $100 billion extra spending for thousands of F-35 engines. Now, what we have to do right now as our best shot to kill the hate bill is put enormous pressure on Obama starting this afternoon. Our emails have to get to him first thing Monday morning, because it could, this defense authorization bill with the hate bill attached could be on his desk by Tuesday. And when I'm doing a lot of talk radio, a lot of writing, and encouraging Americans right now to email these two messages to the president immediately. Number one, and I'll take it really slow, Mr. President, I will vote out Democrats at midterms if you sign the freedom-destroying federal hate crimes bill. Again, Mr. President, I will vote out Democrats at midterms if you sign the freedom-destroying federal hate crimes bill. And then the second message, I'd like you to email him. Mr. President, I expect you to keep your promise to veto any military authorization bill that wastes $100 billion of taxpayers' money on unnecessary F-35 jet engines. Again, Mr. President, I expect you to keep your promise to veto any military authorization bill that wastes $100 billion of taxpayers' money on unnecessary F-35 jet engines. Now, you can go to the White House website, which is www.whitehouse.gov /contact. Again, that's www.whitehouse.gov/contact. Paste in these two emails. Actually, it'd be best if you did one email for each message. In other words, send two emails. Now, if you haven't have your pencil and your paper handy, you can come to truthtellers.org, our website. Right there on the home page in the upper right-hand emergency alert, you'll find this latest message, and you can take it from there. I strongly encourage everybody to take our latest e-alert. I believe it's Thursday's. It's only a page long, and I'm reading from it right now. Put it on your email list. Send it out as widely as possible, because literally we could lose free speech by this Tuesday if President Obama signs the federal hate bill.
And I don't think it does any good, Ted, for us to spend the time on this program tonight hypothesizing as exactly what would happen to everyone if this passes. We need to be taking all of the time and energy that we have between now and then to ensuring that it does go down to defeat, as it has gone down to defeat so many times in the past, based upon the efforts primarily spearheaded, Reverend Pike, by you. But I think a lot of the people, though, Reverend Pike, are under the impression that it is a foregone conclusion now that this will be enacted into law, be signed into law. You are saying that there still exists a chance that this could go down into defeat and they would have to start from scratch yet again.
Well, there is. There is a very strong chance. Number one, the president has repeatedly warned as late as the VFW convention in August in Phoenix that specifically if those F-35 $100 billion of spending on F-35 engines is on there, he's basically saying, read my lips, there will be a veto of that arms authorization bill. And the Congress is going right into his face saying, we'll put it on even though you have warned us not to. Now, at stake here, I believe, is Obama's credibility. He's being under severe criticism for possibly mismanaging our role in Afghanistan and defense spending in other areas, and he wants to, I believe, he wants to establish his credibility as a president who doesn't just spend us into oblivion, but also is very, very frugal, especially on defense, military contracts, military pork, and all of that kind of thing. This is his first veto threat to Congress concerning the F-35 engines. I believe he has a lot to gain by standing on his promise, ensuring his credibility with the American people, rather than bowing to the wills of a military-industrial complex that rules Congress, spending literally $100 billion here on a very largely wasteful authorization of extra engines, which will probably be outdated and obsolete anyway in a couple of years. So what have we got to lose? Now, tragically, the religious right, the conservative right, is oblivious to this opportunity. I'm the only one who seems to be able to see the common sense on encouraging the President of the United States to keep his promise. That doesn't seem to me like a far-fetched premise that we should bombard Obama and let him know that millions of people in America are aware that he has made a promise to veto the F-35 spending, and we expect him to keep it. Also, we are going to be really mad about a year from now at midterms if he votes in this federal hate crimes bill that will take away freedom like has happened in Canada and European countries.
So basically, all that's left, I'm just trying to follow accurately here so everyone will have a true accounting of what's happening. Basically, all that's left to stop the first incarnation of the hate crimes bill being enacted into law is the signature from the president. It's already passed the House and the...
No, it hasn't passed the Senate.
It has not passed
the
Senate.
No, it was...
Okay,
it was,
all right, thank you for the clarification on that.
Yeah, it was debated hotly in the Senate on Tuesday. It passed the House on Thursday. But the Senate still has to make the final vote, probably on Monday or Tuesday. So we're working here with at least probably 2 days' time to bombard the president. But theoretically, let's say that the Senate did ratify it tomorrow morning, It could probably be on the president's desk by Tuesday morning, you see. So it's absolutely imperative that everyone, right after this program, go to their computer and cut and paste these two simple sentences in there. You can put it in your own language. I don't care. Main thing is, number one, we're going to get even with the Democrats in midterms if they vote in federal hate crimes legislation and Obama signs it. Number two, we expect the president to keep his word to the American people that he is not going to squander another $100 billion of our taxpayers' money on out, probably an outdated airplane that's only going to be militarily viable for another couple of years. So that's a very simple message, a very reasonable message, and I believe we have to, what we have to do right now is we know that the ADL and the top Democratic leaders and the homosexual lobby are right now pressuring Obama to go back on his word and forget about his threat. But what we want to do is not only send in those emails and let him know we're holding him to the line, but we need to pray as we have never prayed before to Almighty God for deliverance.
Amen to that, Reverend Pike. And sit tight, everyone. We'll recap and give you a little more information right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool Guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Thank you, Art. James Edwards is back here with you on tonight's live installment of the award-winning Political Cesspool radio program. Still much more to come during tonight's third hour. We're going to be covering some stories that obviously have piqued our interest, including two GOP senators want an all-out U.S. war against Iran. Who are they and why do they want it? Well, you can probably guess, but we'll tell you anyway. Tom Tancredo has launched an attack against our nemesis over at the Southern Poverty Law Center. Listen to what Congressman Tancredo has to say. And finally, Time Magazine blames white people for the destruction of Detroit. You're not going to want to miss the just mesmerizing wit and intelligence that Time displays in this article. But that's all trivial compared to the matter that we are discussing right now with our featured guest and good friend, Reverend Ted Pike. Reverend Pike has done a great job of articulating exactly what is at stake with regard to the implementation into law, the federal hate crimes bill. He has given us a couple of options here in order to continue to fight against this to the very last moment. And perhaps, with God's help, we will be granted another victory on this matter. And is it a Hail Mary? Is the plan that Reverend Pike has laid out for us a Hail Mary? Maybe, maybe not, but as he said, what could it hurt to try? I think it's the best option that we have of all that's left on the table at this time. But Reverend Pike, before you go back into to recapping exactly what people need to do, and I don't mind being repetitive on this program, particularly when something so grave is at stake. We'll repeat everything we did in the last segment if that's what it takes to get people clear on what they need to be doing between now and Monday. But I do have to ask you this before you go into that. What is it, because you mentioned this in the last segment, what do you think it is, Reverend Pike, that has handicapped our churches and rendered them impotent in the fight to stop the hate crimes legislation? It would seem as though this would be in the best interest of all Christians to stand up and to rally as a one united force and stop this, yet not only do they not seem unconcerned about it, they seem as though they might even be in favor for it. Am I missing something here? What's happened to our churches, Reverend Pike?
Well, I think that a lot of people are concerned. An ever-increasing number know that, there's a dreadful conspiracy here against our free speech through hate crimes laws. And evangelical media like WorldNet Daily have have dramatized how in Canada, European countries, Australia, and so on, it is a hate crime to criticize homosexuality or even Islam. The problem is that all of these bills that are coming through Congress right now are generated by the Anti-Defamation League. In fact, in its latest alert, which came out right after the passage by the House of the Arms Bill on Thursday, ADL, again, generously gave itself credit for the creation of hate crimes legislation in America, 45 U.S. states, and also the federal hate bill, it claims, credit for having generated and promoted. But the evangelical leaders all know that ADL is right beneath the surface, and ADL is very trigger-happy about accusing, taking pot shots at anybody who comes near matters Jewish, as becomes critical of the pet product projects of Zionism and Jewish supremacists. So evangelical leaders over certainly the last 10 years have shied away from intensive, in-depth investigation and education about the hate crime menace in the Western Hemisphere. As a result, it's been kept on the back burner, put way down underneath issues like abortion and gay rights and so on, which are also pretty good money makers, and the hate crimes issue doesn't bring in much money and contributions. So it has been very much neglected, and now it's all caught up with this. Literally within hours, the president could be signing the hate bill into law.
Well, and again, what are our options for resistance on this matter, Reverend Pike? I think you laid it out quite meticulous later in the previous segment, but I'd like to go through those options one more time. We need to be very clear and very specific because time is of the essence. Time has never been more crucial. We have perhaps 2 days to give this our all.
Yes. Well, again, the president has promised repeatedly this spring and summer that he will veto a defense authorization bill that includes $100 billion extra spending for F-35 fighter engines. Now, that should be an open invitation for every freedom-loving American to contact the president and say, please uphold your promise, stay true to your promise. That's all we're asking here, basically. And we have two brief messages here which we want everybody to email tonight, so it'll be on his desk in the morning. Mr. President, I will vote out Democrats at midterms if you sign the freedom-destroying federal hate crimes bill. This is the first message, the first email to the president. Mr. President, I will vote out Democrats at midterms if you sign the freedom-destroying federal hate crimes bill. And then the second email to the president is, Mr. President, I expect you to keep your promise to veto any military authorization bill that wastes $100 billion of taxpayers' money on unnecessary F-35 jet engines. One more time, Mr. President, I expect you to keep your promise to veto any military authorization bill that wastes $100 billion of taxpayers' money on unnecessary F-35 jet engines. And you can just go to the White House website, which is www.whitehouse.gov/contact. That's www.whitehouse.gov/contact. Contact, cut and paste those in and send them off. Unfortunately, the president's comment line, his fax line, remain clogged with health care protests and so on, so we can't use faxes, even phoning in. Best way to do is email now, get those messages in, and they'll be in the White House first thing in the morning.
And Reverend Pike, for those who perhaps are driving around in a car listening to the broadcast tonight, maybe couldn't get to a pen and paper pad. Can they go to your website and get all of the information that you just let us know?
I'm reading from our latest e-alert that came up Thursday evening. It's right there in the upper right corner at truthtellers.org. And you can get all this information, this instructions, the government White House website, and lots of other information there at Truth Tellers.
Well, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. You've got your marching orders. Now, there's still an hour of this radio broadcast forthcoming, but we will have, in just a moment's time, a six-minute burst of national news. And during that time, I couldn't think of a better time, while it's fresh on your mind and at the forefront of your memory, to go and do exactly which Reverend Pike has laid out. What could it hurt? It's not going to take more than a couple of minutes of your time, but it could potentially work. And we're here to come together and offer solutions and workable plans. And this is as good as any that I've heard at this late stage of the game.
Well, it's not the only thing I can possibly think of. I should mention that the ADL just came out yesterday with a victory statement about what they consider is the final passage of the hate bill. The truth is it's not passed yet. It has to be passed by the Senate. It has to be signed by the president. Nevertheless, let me listen to this quote from the ADL. The end of the legislative path for the hate crimes bill also marks the beginning of the next campaign, training prosecutors and law enforcement officials about the new law. ADL stands ready to help lead this continuing effort. They're going into stage two now, which is to massively train lawyers, prosecutors, and law enforcement to bring indictments and prosecution, criminalization of thought crimes, speech crimes, Christian values in this country in the coming days. They're ready to move. But we've got to disappoint ADL right now. It's not a law yet, and while there's still another 48 hours, we are going to scream bloody murder to the American people, to our churches, and to President Obama that we will not stand for losing our free speech under a federal hate crimes law.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's nothing more important than you could do with 5 minutes of your time than take a stand on this issue and follow Reverend Pike's prescription and carry it to a T. Reverend Pike, thank you for being, once again, as I always say, the Spartan on this issue, for standing up for our people, for leading the charge when so many are weary to follow. You continue to do it. You serve as an inspiration to us, sir, and our thoughts and prayers are always with you.
Thank you so much, James.
Reverend Ted Pike, everybody, check him out at truthtellers.org and get to work. Help us beat the hate crimes bill. Much more to come during tonight's third hour. We'll be back with more in the political cesspool right after this.
Believe it or not, there's a third hour of tonight's installment of the political cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
They call the rise.